Open our Bible to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. And I'll begin reading with verse 13. Matthew 16, verse 13. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." Jesus said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." Verse 18. "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Up until this point in Matthew's gospel, Jesus has never made reference to himself as being the Son of God. But the rumors on the street are swirling about him. Who is this Jesus? Why is this Jesus here? What is it that this Jesus is wanting? And so on this occasion, Jesus turns to his disciples and he asks them, "Who is it that people are saying I am?" And in other words, what is the scuttlebutt out in the street about who I am? And they said, "Well, Lord, some people think that you're John the Baptist. And others think that you're Elijah or Jeremiah or that you're one of the prophets." Then in verse 15, Jesus asked the disciples, "But who do you think that I am?" You see, that's the only question that really matters. We can talk about what the world is saying about Jesus. We can talk about what others think of Jesus. But the bottom line is this: who do you think Jesus is? And so Peter answers, which he was prone to do in the group. Peter says, "Well, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus said to him, "You're blessed for saying that, because man did not reveal that answer to you, but God revealed that answer to you." And then Jesus said in verse 18, look at it with me one more time. Jesus said, "I tell you, you are Peter, and upon this rock," that is, upon the foundation that I am the living Son of God, on that foundation of who I am, the living Son of God, Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. I want you to understand this morning, that is one of the most important statements in all of Scripture. Because that is a statement that tells us so very, very much. First, that statement tells us that Jesus came to establish the church. He came to establish the church. Listen to me. The church is not just a good idea. No. The church isn't a holy club. You can take it or leave it. One of the primary reasons that Jesus came into this world was to establish the church. Jesus knew. He knew that the church was going to be the instrument through which his message would be made known to the world. Jesus knew it was through the church that the gospel of Christ would be shared to the world. He knew that. Jesus knew that the church, that his body would be the means by which God's work would get done in this world. You cannot accept Jesus and reject the church because Jesus and the church go hand in hand, and Jesus came to establish the church. But look at that statement again. I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. That statement tells us that the church belongs to Christ. Look again at the statement. It is a single possessive statement. Church, that's singular. My, that's possessive. It is a singular possessive statement. The church belongs to Jesus. Brethren, the church doesn't belong to Peter. It never did. The church doesn't belong to Paul. It never did. The church doesn't belong to John Calvin or John Wesley or Alexander Campbell. It never did. The church belongs to Jesus. It's his. And what that means is that absolutely everything that happens in the church must revolve around one single question, and that question is, what would Jesus do if he were here? Jesus said, upon the foundation that I am the living Son of the very God, Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against us. In that statement, Jesus is saying, I have come to establish the church. In that statement, Jesus said, the church belongs to me. And the third thing he says in that statement is this: Satan is going to try to destroy the church. Satan is going to try to destroy the church. At the end of Jesus' life, as the end approached, Jesus has a very long conversation with the apostles in the Gospel of John. And Jesus explains to those men after he is gone. In John 16 and in verse 2, Jesus told them the day is going to come when they're going to run you out of the synagogue. Jesus then explained to them that the day is going to come when men will think if they kill you, they're doing God's service. Brethren, listen, when the church does what Jesus wants the church to do, write it down, there's going to be opposition. There's going to be opposition. Now, sometimes the attacks are going to come from without. And Satan is going to try to destroy the church from without. Every generation has individuals and institutions and groups who set out to destroy the church. Every generation has its Madeline Mary O'Hara who sets out to stop the church. But sadly, there are also going to be attacks from within. Not everybody who associates with the church does so because they love Jesus. And Paul explained to the elders at Ephesus in Acts the 20th chapter and in verse 30, Paul told them that from your own number, men will arise and they will twist the truth around. And the purpose of twisting the truth around is that they want to lead people away from Christ. Brethren, listen to me. The devil is going to try to destroy the church. Now let's look what I have said. I have said that Jesus came to establish the church. I have said that the church belongs to Jesus. And third, I have said that the devil is going to try to destroy the church. Now here's the sermon. Satan is never gonna win. Jesus said that the gates of Hades is never going to prevail against it. What it? Me building my church. Death, the power of death, the devil, and all of the power of hell is not going to stop the church. And the one thing that you can count on in a world where we rapidly can't count on a whole lot of things, the one thing that every one of us can always and forever count on is this: the church marches on. The church marches on. People may attack the church, but the church marches on. People may belittle the church, but the church marches on. People may rise up and take action against the church, but the church marches on. And I'm telling you this morning that this statement, the church marches on, this is a statement that you can see absolutely everywhere. Number one, the church marches on, and you can see it in the scriptures. Just read the scripture casually and look at everything Satan did to try to destroy the church. Let's start right here in Matthew chapter 16. When Jesus made that statement, I will build my church and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it, those words of our text were barely off his lips. When he was wrongly arrested, he was put through the mockery of a little illegal trial and was crucified. And for 3 days, it appeared as if the devil had actually stopped this and won. But on the third day, the crucified Jesus became the resurrected Christ, and the church marches on. 40 days after his resurrection, Jesus ascended back to the Father in heaven. And before he ascended back, he told the apostles to go into the city of Jerusalem and wait there. Power from on high will fill you men. And those men went to the city of Jerusalem, and for 7 days they stayed in the city of Jerusalem waiting for that power to come. And when the day of Pentecost came, recorded in Acts 2, that power came. And the gospel of Jesus Christ was preached. And after the first service, there were 3,000 members of the Church of Christ. And everything was going great. But a short time later, the devil starts trying to destroy the church. So Satan fills the heart of Ananias and Sapphira to lie to the church. Trouble came within the church. Ananias and Sapphira were killed, and the church marches on. A very short time later, the sin of murmuring enters into the church. And the Greek-speaking widows in the church began murmuring that they weren't being taken care of like the Hebrew-speaking widows, and they wanted to know what was going on. And I'm telling you, what was going on right there was a backhanded way of saying you're being prejudiced against us because we're not like them. But the apostles stepped in, they moved the church to action, the problem was resolved, and the church marches on. Keep reading. Stephen is stoned, but the church marches on. Keep reading. Paul is persecuted, but the church marches on. Keep reading. James the apostle is beheaded, but the church marches on. Keep reading. John the apostle is exiled to the island of Patmos, but the church marches on. You can kill the apostles, but you can't stop the church. You can ridicule the elders, but you can't stop the church. You can belittle the preacher, but you can't stop the church. You can ignore the deacons, but you can't stop the church.
Jesus said, upon this rock, on the fact I am the Son of God, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades and all of hell will not stop what I'm about to do. And for 2,000 years, the church marches on. Read it. Read it. Everything the devil could think of outside and inside the church, he did in an effort to destroy it, but the church marches on, and you see it in the scriptures. Number two, the church marches on, and you can see it in history. You can see it in history. For the next several minutes, I want you on purpose to follow me. The first 300 years of Christianity, beginning in Acts 2, the first 300 years of Christianity, there were major attacks of persecution made on the church by the Roman Empire to stop it. In AD 54, the church began in AD 33, so 20 years after its beginning, a man by the name of Nero became the Roman emperor. Nero had an image in his mind of what he wanted Rome to be. He wanted it to be great in his honor. So Nero devised a plan where he was going to burn the poor sections of town. He would burn down the slums of Rome and rebuild it to his glory. So Nero had the great fire of Rome set, but the fire got out of control. And before the fire was put out, 2/3 of the city of Rome had burnt, along with some of its greatest edifice. Nero, in order to get the problem away from him, Nero, the emperor, blamed the Christians for the burning of Rome. And Nero incited the entire world against the church, and a bloody, deadly persecution that you can't even describe broke out against the church. History records that Nero was a man who loved chariot races. There is an awful page of history where one night Nero was enjoying the chariot races, and when the sun went down, it became dark, and when it became dark, the ancient world had to stop because there was no light. But Nero had a solution this night for the darkness. And he gathered up Christians, and he dipped them in pitch, and he hung them up on crosses and set them on fire. They burned to bring daylight to godless Nero so that his chariot races could continue. Nero reigned from 54 to 68 AD. In AD 81, a man by the name of Domitian became the Roman emperor. He reigned from 81 to 96 AD. The Emperor Domitian is the heart of the message of Revelation that John is getting across to the Christians. Domitian was an emperor who had a God complex. He thought he was God. And Domitian passed a decree in the Roman Empire where every citizen of the Roman Empire had to go to the capital of their province, and they had to announce that Domitian, the Caesar, was Lord and God. But the Christians couldn't do that because only Jesus was Lord. So in the book of Revelation, John describes the Domitian as, quote, the one who drank the blood of the saints. That was 2,000 years ago. Today, Nero is gone. Today, Domitian is gone. But the church marches on. We come out of the first century and into the second century. And Trajan becomes the emperor. And Trajan passes a law that says that anybody who converts to Christianity will be taken and sacrificed to one of the Roman gods. In the early second century, our brethren were human sacrifices for the godless Roman Empire. Later on in the second century, Marcus Aurelius, he becomes the emperor. And as emperor, Marcus Aurelius loosened up the laws for a lot of the people, but not the Christians. In fact, history records the reign of Marcus Aurelius as being the emperor to whom the blood of the Christians flowed like water in the Roman Empire. You leave the second century and you come to the third century, and Severus becomes the emperor. And Severus passed a law that said it is punishable by death if anybody converts to Christianity. Listen to me. Pass all the laws you want to pass. You're not going to stop the church. The church will always march on. In the fourth century, Diocletian became the emperor. And in the fourth century, throughout the entire Roman Empire, under Diocletian, every church building was burned to the ground. Today, Diocletian is gone, but the church marches on. Listen to me, brethren. Listen to me. The 5th century, the 6th century, the 7th century, the 8th century, and on and on and on, the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th century. For 2,000 years, persecution has come and gone, but the church marches on. For 2,000 years, false teachers have come and gone, but the church marches on. For 2,000 years, denominationalism comes and goes, but the church marches on. Think about this. Think about this. Since Acts chapter 2, Acts 2, there has never been a single day that the church hasn't existed somewhere in this world. On the foundation that I am the Son of the living God, I will build my church, and all of hell can't stop it. So the church marches on. And you see it in the scripture. The church marches on, And there's 2,000 years of history to look at. One more, number three. The church marches on, and you can see it today. When communism went to Russia in 1917, one of the first official acts of communist Russia was to officially announce that Russia would now be an atheistic country. No God. No God. Look at it today. You know what's going on today? They're begging for Bibles. They're begging for a Bible. Stalin is gone. Lenin is gone. But the church marches on. The church marches on. I have come here today, and I have preached this lesson to say this sentence. Thank God for the church. Thank God for the church. I have come here today. I have preached this sermon to say this to you. May we never pass through these doors and have a seat in here without realizing and understanding what has had to happen for us to do this. They arrested Jesus for no reason. They stripped him and flogged him. They put him on a cross. And they pulled him down. He was buried and raised again. But millions, millions, millions have died so that you and I could take a seat in this place. And God help us to never ever forget that. Somebody has to say this, so I'm going to say it. When you look back and see what our brethren went through, James the Apostle was beheaded. Paul was beheaded by godless Nero. The Apostle Peter was crucified upside down. They took his brother Andrew and crucified him upside down. Others of the apostles were flayed. Do you know what that means? They were flayed alive. Others had spears put through them.
And you leave Jesus and the apostles and you start coming down through history, the millions who died and the ways that they died. Listen to me. Heavy, heavy, heavy hangs over the head of our brethren who walk away from this. You think it's a light thing to walk away from Jesus after what 2,000 years of our brethren have dealt with so we could be here? But we allow the devil to fill our hearts with sin, with fear, with anxiety, and everything else. Jesus wrote to one of the churches through the hand of John in Revelation 2, a church that was being persecuted and brethren who were being put to death. And Jesus said to them, "Be faithful to death, and you'll receive a crown of life." Actually, what he said was much more pointed than that. What Jesus said to those brethren who were looking at death, Jesus told them, "Be faithful in view of your death, and you'll receive a crown of life." Thank God for the church. And may we never, ever walk in here, sit through a service, and take what goes on here for granted. Too many millions have died. If you're here this morning and if you're not a Christian, all of this has happened so that you may become a New Testament Christian. You can leave here this morning with salvation in your breast. If you're here this morning as a Christian and away from God, look at all that's been done so that you could come home. Come home. Do this. Thank God for the church as together we stand and as we sing.